Hello everybody, you are watching English for You, the program that helps you improve your English. A very warm welcome. In the studio I have my intelligent, enthusiastic, smiling, repeat, smiling Fazekas students. Kota, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Andrew, what's up?
Everything's fine, thanks.
Okay. Victor, how's it hanging?
I'm great, thanks.
Victoria, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Great. And today's special guest is Mr. Simon Gore. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Simon, I swear, they don't know anything about this program. They don't know about the topic. They know nothing about you.
That's good.
So you might be an astronaut. You might be a ballet dancer. You might be a mass murderer. Possibly not.
I want a minute.
And you might be a, what? A doctor. But we're going to help my students with a couple of words to come up with intelligent guesses. And here we go. Dig, spatula, find, and artifact. And I would like you, Simon, would you please show a spatula? And maybe another tool. And don't say a word. And again, look at those four words. And would you like to come up with guesses?
Might be an archaeologist.
What makes you think so?
The artifact thing and the dig.
Uh-huh. Right. Can you... Fantastic, isn't it?
Amazing.
Amazing. So Simon is an archaeologist. Dig. Can you say it in... can you use another word instead of dig?
Well, formally we call it an excavation.
And what about a find?
Well, probably artifact would be the more correct term. For find.
Right. So we have already learned that this gentleman here is an archaeologist, but we still don't know where he's from. So we're going to need someone else's help. And a person who was on the show in 2001, he's going to help us. And I would like you to say where he's from. So would you just roll the tape, please?
I chose this photograph because it's... something I'd like to be doing very soon, but this year probably won't be, that will be having Christmas at home in Australia with my family. Mm. And this is a picture of Christmas dinner in my family.
And in the background you can see...
in the backyard with the palm trees.
So the climate was... what kind of climate did
probably
you have?
Probably about 35 degrees.
Ooh, it's pretty hot,
and,
isn't it?
And 95% humidity.
Right, so where do you think Simon is from? Andrew?
Perhaps from Australia.
Right. Would you put up your hand if you recognize this gentleman? Yes, Vicky.
He was the architect working on, well, among other things also, the zoo, and imitated Kóskároly's style and also wrote a book on him.
Excellent, your memory is fantastic. Do you recognize this smiling gentleman with this sort of mischievous smile?
It's possible I've met him before.
Yes, so who is he?
Oh, he'd be my older brother, Anthony.
And is he responsible for your being here?
No, that's my parents, but...
I mean, in Hungary, right.
In a way, I guess, because I actually came over here in 1989 first to be the best man at his wedding, and... So I guess you could blame him that I'm here, either good or bad, but...
And is Hungary somehow responsible for your being an archaeologist?
In a way, I think I was always interested in history, ancient history, but coming here I got to see things more close-hand. It's very different to Australia from an archaeological point of view as well. And I met some people here. I met an archaeologist as well, who was my brother's and my sister-in-law's friend, and he helped me. And... I guess things just happened one after the other,
So I'm very proud that Hungary plays an important role in your life. That's good.
It does. Well, my wife's Hungarian too.
Right. So. And we have two words here, archaeology and anthropology. Mm-hmm. And Simon, are you an archaeologist or an anthropologist?
Well, that's an interesting question. In Hungary, they're very different things. But in Australia, I'm an anthropologist. And as an anthropologist... I've chosen to deal with the archaeological side of things, but it's actually one profession in Australia. It's a very different areas within the one field, but yes.
Is it more sensitive in Australia?
I think from many points of view it's much more political, and it's much more sensitive because the indigenous people in Australia are still living there. They're continuing a lifestyle which has been going for a long, long time, 40, 50,000 years at least, which is different to Hungary. If we dig up somebody here, then they don't really have any relatives anymore. It's a completely different situation.
Right. So. To me, archaeology focuses on buried things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's too simple.
Well, particularly if you look at from how I've studied as an anthropologist, we're still dealing with people that live today. And from my point of view, something can be an artifact as long as it was made by man, or by people, I should say, rather than by men.
Right. The stereotypical picture of an archaeologist is somehow very, very romantic.
Mm-hmm.
You can see Lord Carnarvon here, an English aristocrat and art collector and non-professional archaeologist who found the buried palace of, or the buried place of Tutankhamun in 1922. And legend goes that everybody in the team died within 2 years because of the curse of the pharaoh.
Curse of the mummy, it's even a movie.
Oh, yeah. curse of the mummy, right. Or, obviously, the greatest archaeologist of all times is Indiana Jones, right? Alias Harrison Ford, full of adventures. Now, Simon sent me a couple of photographs which somehow contradict this picture. And here we're going to have the first picture, which is a typical picture of reality. And I would like you, Kata, to say a couple of words in connection with this photograph.
I see four people digging a hole, and it's winter, and they might be freezing, but I think that's all I can say because I don't see any more things.
Right. I named this picture, and the title is Illegal Grave Diggers. I don't know how you like this. So what are the hardships of your job?
Well, I think quite often we're called to do rescue excavations in sites which have some very strict time limits, and we have to work very quickly, and sometimes we can't really choose what weather we work in, how we work, the conditions. For example, that photo you can see wasn't very pleasant. Every morning we had to sweep the snow off the features. And
right, and I can show you another photograph. Yes, here we go. My title, Call It A Day. So the end of a day, other people go home and wash their hands, whereas what's happening here, Simon?
Well, first we've seen a lovely winter day at work, and this is a lovely summer day, a nice nice shower. And
what are you doing here?
Well, unfortunately, I thought it'd be a good day to come to work in sandals.
Was it a good idea?
Not really.
Right, but Simon has brought along a couple of artifacts, and I'm going to put them right here, he found at different places. And I'm going to give out those artifacts, and I would like you to come up with intelligent guesses about the material, what kind of people you think used them, and when. The first one for you.
Thanks.
This is for you.
Thanks.
And Victor and Victoria.
Thanks.
Over to you, Kata.
I think this is a boomerang, and here we can see a kangaroo, and I think that this might have been used by those inhabitants of the island, Australia, for hunting.
And the inhabitants, sorry to interrupt you, the inhabitants are called?
Well, I guess
indigenous people.
Indigenous people is probably the more politically correct term,
yes.
But Aboriginal people.
Aboriginal people, mm-hmm. Indigenous people.
They have their own names according to their language groups as well.
Right.
Themselves,
so. So what's the story with this boomerang?
Well, this is, I'll tell you briefly a little bit about boomerangs. This is probably more of a decorative type, but they are often used as weapons for hunting as well. Probably most interesting on this boomerang would be the painting style. In North Australia, they have a painting style which is called X-ray style. And you can see, for example, the kangaroo, it shows some of the internal organs.
Would you say it again? X-ray type paintings.
Yeah.
Excellent. Wonderful.
So it's a particular style which I think is unique to the Australian Aboriginal people.
Right.
And quite beautiful, I think, too.
Yes, very nice. Andrew, what have you got?
Well, these are pieces of clay, perhaps, or some sort of other material, and I think they were part of, these some mugs or things like that. So they, I think, water or something was holding them.
Yes. Yeah, so your guess is that the material is clay.
Yes.
And what kind of a thing do you think it was?
Well, perhaps a glass, a bigger type. So
a kind of container.
Yes, I think. A and kind of perhaps container. This was the holder of it, so you could.
Would you hold them? Right. Would you
like
hold
this,
them?
So it's
right.
Like this.
Good. Hold it.
Hold it.
Good. Simon, please.
Okay. Probably, I guess the word we'd use is perhaps a vessel, something like this. They're actually from four different vessels, and they're all from the same, roughly the same period. They're from a Hungarian site where I worked, and they're all late Bronze Age pottery.
Right. So, Victor.
I've got a mask.
Yes.
And the material is wood, and there are...
Would you knock on wood? Right.
Yes, and the face got very characteristic features, and maybe it was used for by the indigenous people.
Everybody, please. Indigenous.
Indigenous.
Good.
People. Maybe the magician used it, or it either can be used by. Maybe actors. From
right. Thank you for your guesses. Agents. Simon, okay. Please.
First of all, it comes from Papua New Guinea. And it's actually, again, probably decorative, but people did use these for various reasons. Some of them represent ancestors. Some of them represent spirits. For many different reasons. Some of them simply decorative. But I think in indigenous cultures, there is no such thing as just simply decorative. And just a little bit more, it's actually painted with ochre, which is earth paint.
Right. Would you say the location again?
In New Guinea, Papua New Guinea.
Papua New Guinea. Very nice. I love this. Victoria?
Mine is a stone, and it's polished. It's very nice to hold. And I think it was, I get the idea it was part of a sock water, you see, because it just has kind of a form that could be bound to a stick and then used for special
Are you planning
things.
To be an archaeologist or something?
No, but we made sock waters when I was young.
Yes. Really? Simon, have you ever heard the word sock water?
No.
This is it in English. So what is it in English?
Well, in technical terms, it's a ground edge axe.
Axe.
Thanks. Okay.
Probably I haven't heard it, but...
Yes?
But very, very good guess, actually. It is actually bound onto a stick, which is probably this form. And it's used for... It's actually... It's been polished and it's volcanic rock and very hard and used for hollowing out... Well, cutting down trees, hollowing out trees for shields, for canoes and things like this as well.
How old would you say this...
Difficult to say. The oldest type of this... This type of tool comes from New Guinea and is about 40,000 years old, but this... It's probably about 300 to 400 years old. So it's
right.
Difficult to say.
Thank you very much, Simon. We are traveling to somewhere else, and I'm going to show you a couple of pictures. And again, I need your guesses. First, I would like to try and identify a couple of the objects and also the use, the material, and probably the time, the date. Would you roll the tape, please? I hoped the music helped you a little and the strange language in the background and obviously this map. So what are your guesses? Victor?
I don't know, maybe the Normans or kind of this...
Tribes?
Tribes, yes.
One of those tribes, so
yes.
the Normans, that's
sure.
Your guess. And the date, would you like to come up with
date,
a date?
Date, maybe... Ooh, I don't know, maybe, no. No,
no. Forget about it. Victoria?
Well.
first of all, did you recognize any of the objects? What kind of objects?
Masks.
Masks?
Swords.
There was a helmet,
shoes,
right?
Swords.
So you have a guess about the tribe or the people?
Vikings.
Vikings. And the date? You can say, leave Victor, please, leave me alone. Andrew?
No idea.
No idea. Kata?
No, no.
Right. No problem. As you can see, well, you can see this map. This might help you. You can see Sutton Hoo somewhere, and we are going to listen to something. And group one, your task is going to be about Sutton Hoo. So what is or what was Sutton Hoo? And group two, how did the excavation start? Would you roll the tape, please?
In March 2002, the National Trust opened a new visitor centre and exhibition hall at Sutton Hoo in southeast England. It documents the extraordinary story of one of Britain's greatest archaeological finds. They were made close by, in what looks like just a couple of grassy mounds. In fact, Sutton Hoo is an Anglo-Saxon cemetery, over 1,300 years old. Legend goes that a wealthy widow named Edith Pretty, who lived at Sutton Hoo in the 1930s, saw ghostly figures on the largest mound and promptly hired the local archaeologist to excavate the site.
Kata?
Well, they made a new visitor centre and an excavation site.
Yes, and what was Sutton Hoo?
I don't know.
Andrew?
I caught that it was an exhibition centre.
It is an exhibition centre.
So I don't really know.
You don't really know? Anybody could help with this? Simon?
It's actually a burial for probably an East Anglian king, Anglo-Saxon.
It's an Anglo-Saxon site from the 7th century, mm-hmm. right? And how did the excavation start? Victoria, please.
There was a widow called Edith Pretty. Was she?
Yeah.
And she lived there in the 1930s, and she called the attention of architects to the fact that there might be something for them to find.
Yeah, and she saw ghostly figures on one of the mounds over there, and she hired an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the next question is, what can happen to objects that are buried over a long period of time? Would you roll the tape, please?
Many of them are very badly corroded. Anything made out of iron, for example, like the swords, for example, and the spears.
While some objects were crushed and mangled over hundreds of years, others looked like they were put in the ground yesterday.
Right. Andrew, could you catch some of the words?
Items can easily get corroded,
or they become corroded, which is a sort of chemical action, yeah. Like water to iron
to
and things like
reaction,
this. So
yes.
Get corroded, right? Chemical action, and
They can get crushed and mangled.
Fantastic. Mangled, which is a physical force on an object, and the object gets torn and
deformed.
Mm. And the other is crushed, which is again a sort of physical change, not for the better but for the worse, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Right. Okay, now we're gonna see a picture and again some guesses, and my guess is that it's an Anglo-Saxon roller coaster or maybe a slide. If you don't agree with this, then please come up with another guess.
It's a boat.
Kata, say it again.
It's a boat.
It's a boat, an Anglo-Saxon long boat. Simon, why did they bury a boat?
Well, it's a good question, actually. Somebody said before that Vikings as well, a lot of the mythology is very much tied together with boats, and it being a vessel to take you to the afterlife, and it's also a symbol of wealth and authority as well. So there's many different things in it. I should say that they never found a body in this grave, so we're not sure if it's actually a cenotaph or a grave or what, but it's very important. It was obviously a very, very wealthy person. So.
Right. And we're going to have, thank you, we're going to have the last clip, and this is exactly the question, why is Sutton Hoo very important? Roll the tape, will you?
It's been called page one of English history because this was the time when the forerunner of our English language was first spoken, when the idea of kingship first arrived and our English laws were first being written down. Christianity was just arriving here.
Okay, Victor, please.
When the English language first spoken.
It was first spoken. So we are talking about the 7th century.
Yes.
The language, what else?
The king.
Kingship.
Kingship.
Kingship was introduced. And one more thing, which was really very important.
Christianity.
And the names of the lords were first written down, and Christianity was arriving there. So it's really, really very important. But Simon, you haven't been working in Sutton Hoo.
No,
you've been working somewhere else. And this is the site where Simon has been working. So where are we?
We're around about 100 kilometres northeast of Budapest, in a place called, between two villages, Ludos and Detk, near the number 3 road. And it's a place called Ludos Varju.
And what are the mountains in the background?
This is the Matra.
Matra, pretty close to number 3. Is it a huge site?
It was. It's disappeared now, but it was a little over 30 hectares. So it's a very, very big site, one of the biggest that has been in Hungary.
Right. And we're going to have a piece of writing. You sent a letter to me, and I just somehow lifted this sentence. Victoria, would you be so kind as to read it out?
Work initially commenced in 1988 in the form of rescue excavations along the proposed path of the number 3 highway prior to its rerouting.
Simon, would you say it in English? Because it's very, very formal. So, for example, commenced is just started.
Just began.
Right? And so what are these rescue excavations?
There's something which... Basically, we go in and rescue something. This area was being taken by the Vishanta mine for the power station. They were bringing up lignite. And we had to remove the artifacts before the mine came along and basically destroyed the entire area. So it's a rescue, it really is. We're coming in, we're trying to preserve what we can and get what information we can while it's still there.
And I might be wrong, but the route of number 3 was rerouted because of the site?
It's because of the mine.
Because of the mine, not because of the archaeological
yes,
site.
Yes, because of mine.
Right. Okay. Another picture, very enigmatic. I don't really know what's happening here. You flooded these digs, or there must have been a huge storm?
Well, we had lots of lovely weather.
So it's because of the weather.
These are pits that we've excavated, and we've come back the next day, and they're full of water.
Right.
In goldfish pond or something.
Right. Now, there's going to be just one more activity for my students. I would like you to choose one. Right. They are very, very important words as far as archaeology is concerned. Would you hold them so that we can see? And Kota, what have you got?
Copper Age.
Stone Age.
Iron Age.
Bronze Age.
But obviously it's not the correct order. So Kota should be the first. Which one would you pick? Which age?
But for the first age?
Yes.
Stone Age.
Yes. So would you just grab the word card and copper, iron and bronze. Are you happy, you two? Are you happy?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. So this is the correct order. So we have Stone Age, Copper Age, Iron Age, and Bronze Age. And here we go. We're going to have the last picture here. We're going to have the last
bronze
picture.
Bronze Age and Iron Age.
Will you say it again?
Bronze Age.
Oh, yes.
Should we?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. That's why it's always good to have a professional on the show. So Bronze Age and Iron Age. Good. Thanks. And here we go. Here we have the last picture here. Would you say a couple of words about the artifacts and why is Varjas Dule site important?
Okay. Just quickly, you can see pottery very similar to that, actually. This is a late Bronze Age pit, I'd imagine, from memory, around about 3,000 years old. There were a large number of Bronze Age. It's one of the largest late Bronze Age settlements so far excavated in Hungary. This was one of probably around 800 features. And from that point of view, this site is very, very important from the late Bronze Age point of view. And from it shows settlement all the way from the Neolithic through to the Hungarian migrations.
Right. So. Thank you very much for being with us. and take care when going home. Bye-bye. It's going to be English for you again next week. Take care.
Giulia elhagyott.
Akarom őt.
Szóval kiárusítod őt, Sasha? Bármit megtennék.
Kísértés.
Azt hiszem, lefeküdtem Sasával.
Titkok.
Nem csak te látsz dolgokat, André.
Nem tetszik, hogy emberek halnak meg a laboromban.
Szenvedély.
Tönkreteszlek, Steve.
Nincsenek játékszabályok.
Michael Krieger biztos sok pénzt fizetne, hogy ne derüljön ki.
$5 millió.
Nincs menekvés.
Ha bántod a családomat, megöllek.
Veszélyes szerelem. Minden hétköznap az M2-n.
A 10 éves Sajtkalmár Kft. Kiemelkedő szereplője a hazai tejpiacnak. Üzleti sikereit a jó minőségű termékeknek és kedvező árainak köszönheti. Fokozott hangsúlyt kap cégünknél a jó minőségű magyar termékek forgalmazása, ezért létrehoztuk a Hortobágy termékcsaládot, mely márkanév garancia a kiváló minőségre. Keresse a Hortobágy tejtermékeket a magyar tulajdonú hálózatok polcain.